Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Cullen Steele in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers, Chris Blair. Chris, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really enjoy it. And what a weekend for the Saints and the Tigers, huh?
Whoa. So Herb Tyler and I, we at Acme Oyster House. We watching the end of the game. And so when they kicked the field goal at the end, that was one lady's voice that was pretty loud. And she was like, "Oh, no." Okay, because when you first saw it get kicked, you thought it was maybe sneak in, and then it goes off to the side, then the place burst up. But Herb and I look at one another because the initial reaction is, oh, my God, maybe she's seeing something we didn't see. Maybe there's a flag on the play. But and it swings off. You talk about a crazy game. That's a crazy one because, okay, you spot them 17 points. You fight back. You see the ebbs and flow of a game, like few, and this is what, the second largest comeback since the 70s for LSU to come back and do it on the road. It wasn't a pretty game, but you don't get nothing for style points.
No, it goes down as a W, and we were joking earlier this morning in the office, Mike, that a couple of weeks, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks from now, depending on how the season goes, all you know is there's a W by that game, and that's, you know, all that really matters. And, you know, it's interesting you talk about, you know, the back and forth and the ebbs and flows. You know, I credit both teams, really. There were 22 penalties, almost 200 yards. We talked about it on the radio from the very beginning. It seemed like every flag there was a conference. The game went nearly 4 hours, and this is one of the few times I can't blame the TV guys. This was just the conferences and huddles between penalties. So it almost felt like even though a team would get some momentum, and obviously South Carolina had it to start to get that 17-0 lead, you know, once LSU got the score by Caden Durham, who was just phenomenal as a freshman, once they kind of got their feet settled, it really was hard for either team, I think, between some of the big plays by the opposing defenses, and I think just the way the game flowed, that nobody ever really got into a true rhythm. There were little pieces of it, and then there would be a wrench thrown in the gears, and then you had to kind of build yourself back up again. And again, I give both teams credit for that, but you know, that's a heck of a win. There were some certain bright spots, and you know, I listened to Coach Kelly Monday. I'm sure you did as well as Tiger fans. It was interesting to me that, you know, he really pressed upon how important it is now that they've got new coordinators, they've got new coaches, they've got a bevy of true freshmen that are playing already, Mike, and they also have the transfers that come in. And he really, you know, digged down on the fact that now they've got 3 games of game film. And I think reading between the lines, that's kind of like, okay, now we're getting an idea who the personnel needs to be. And then secondly, how do we put them in a position to succeed and maximize their talent and skill? And it'd be great if you could roll that out there week one, and I'm sure that's what Coach Kelly and company want to be able to eventually do. But that's why I'm optimistic. I think the fact that they got the win the way they got the win is going to help them moving forward. And I think it came at a great time because you've got 2 home games out of conference, UCLA, then South Alabama. You roll into the first of your bye weeks before you really start that continued gauntlet of the SEC. I'm optimistic over the next couple of weeks to see how this Tiger team works based on personnel and, again, drawing up the schemes that will be successful. Because if you look at the Nichols game and you look at the South Carolina game, there were some big plays given up, and you got to eliminate those. But I thought they did a pretty good job on third down, especially as the game wore on. And I think they really locked down defensively as the game went on. They just got to be able to put that together for 4 quarters. And I know that's easier said than done. But the roadmap is there.
At least they're getting off the field on third down. We didn't see that at all last year. Pete Jenkins has a story. And is in the Florida game. And, man, Jaden Daniels, he gets the ball. And I think he threw one short pass. And he takes off running. And he scores. And Pete greets him on the field, and, man, he hugs him, and he said, "Jaden, man, I love you. This may be the greatest performance I've ever seen in Tiger Stadium, but you scored too damn fast. Now I got to put my defense back on the field." And Jaden tell him, "Coach, don't worry about it. If they score fast, we're going to score fast." And Pete was like, man, okay, this is a 22-year-old young man telling me this, but don't worry about it, coach. You know, I got it. And just couldn't get off the field. I think for LSU fans, the big play, giving up those chunk plays, I think that's the thing that they've got to eliminate. Come on, if you're going to go down field and score, you got to earn it. And I think, you know, seeing Rocket Sanders making those long runs, a quarterback for South Carolina making the long runs, I think that's the big kind of, hey, we got to get this fixed. Because when we're going to play the Ole Miss and Alabamas of the world, man, they don't care about, you know, you getting your defense fixed. All they worried about is scoring.
No, I think you're 100% right. I mean, I think there's an aggressive nature to Coach Baker, which I welcome. You know, there were times over the last 2 years where it almost felt like LSU's defense, Mike, was let's don't get beat. But it wasn't an attacking style. So I was impressed with Coach Baker, you know, what he did at Missouri and even his time here as an assistant coach. So I like that. I just think sometimes, you know, there's some guys learning how to set the edge. I mean, we talk about, you know, the either side of the defensive front. You talk about the linebackers. And we spent a lot of time Saturday in the South Carolina game talking about the LSU secondary when it comes to the run game and stopping the run. And there were times they were a little over-aggressive. They peaked in, and that's how you had the 67-yard run by Sanders and then the 75-yard run by Sellers. So, again, I think there's that can be cleaned up. That can be taken care of. They can create a little more discipline there. Get their eyes right, knowing that where, you know, the cornerbacks are responsible for a run game. And, I listened to Ashton Stamps yesterday, the LSU corner, and he talked about it. He said, look, you know, we get all the glory for going out and deflecting passes and getting interceptions, but we understand now our job is also very important in the run game. And when you look at those couple of huge run plays that went for scores against Nichols and Guggenheim with, you know, that incredible run, and then the two for South Carolina – again, those are things that will be fixed, and I have no doubt whatsoever they're working with eye discipline and responsibility in the run game, not only up front, not only at the linebacker position, but also in the secondary.
Chris, we had to go back to Pete maybe a couple weeks before LSU started the season against Southern Cal and asked him, you know, give me a couple players you think will break out on defense. And he brought up right away Savion Jones. He said, Mike, I think this is his year to really kind of turn it on. And then he said, you know what, Braden Swenson. And he said, Mike, I think it might be his time. Boy, did he have a breakout game against South Carolina. Terrific game, put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, not only for sacks, also for pressures, but also his ability to run the field. And Pete brought that up to me. Mike, he can run. For a big man, he can really, really run. And so he was really high on Swenson and also Savion. Your thoughts on the progression of both those guys this year?
Oh, I thought they were tremendous Saturday, and you've seen them get better and better each week. And, you know, we went into that game talking about South Carolina's edge rushers and, you know, how LSU's offensive line, especially Emory and Will, would be able to handle those guys because, you know, Kennard had a great career at Georgia Tech, sure, and very early in that game he made his presence known. But as the game wore on, we were talking more about the LSU edge rushers, which, again, was such a welcome sight to see, and Braden Swenson just had an incredible game. You know, people may forget he got banged up on a couple of plays and still just kept coming back for more and had those three very important sacks. And, you know, Savion, I think, you know, I've called his name a bunch through the first three games of the season. And I know Coach Kevin Peoples. He was at Georgia Southern when I was there. I was excited when he was added to the staff because that's kind of his specialty. And I think Coach Peoples has done an excellent job in concert with Coach Baker in getting back to LSU style again of being aggressive, especially, you know, rushing off the edge. And they're certainly going to need it. I mean, you know, South Carolina, a little limited at quarterback in the sense that you kind of know what Sellers is going to do. Unfortunately, he goes down. You had a little bit of intel on Ashford from his time at Auburn, and you knew he was going to be limited throwing the ball and, they, you know, look for him to run. And you're going to see quarterbacks that, again, will be dual threat. You'll see some quarterbacks that really want to use the pass and are very good at it, you know, with games coming up. And the fact that you're now starting to have that type of havoc in the offensive backfield of your opponent is nothing but a welcome sign, I'm sure, for Tiger fans everywhere.
Caden Durham, you know, Bobby was asking me about him. Mike, what's his background? I said, Bobby's one thing, fast. I mean, yeah. Okay, when you're one of the top sprinters in the state of Texas, and I know one thing, they got a lot of fast guys in the state of Texas. He's kind of a shortcut runner, well-built. You saw his vision. He ran up the back of a couple blockers. But, man, I don't know, Chris, maybe it's me. But I see that more and more today. I think guys may be a little bit aggressive. They run up the back of a blocker and almost like they use it like a shield. Okay, I run up the back and then, okay, where's the crease, left or right? And then they take off, either to the left or right. He did that at least three times in that game against South Carolina. Brian Kelly didn't give him the baton and say, you my guy, but – yeah, I think if he was a sophomore, he might have. But as a freshman, he was like, come on, one game, and it's not going to do it for you. I think we're still going to see running back by committee. It is what Brian Kelly has always done every stop he's been at. So you're going to see Josh Williams. You're going to see Caleb Jackson. You're going to see Caden Durham. But, man, did he make an impact and quickly on this football team. And if he gets out into the open field, good luck trying to catch him.
You know, early in that game, and you're exactly right, there were a couple of plays where Durham was right there on the backside of his offensive line, you know, after the handoff. But Jacob Hester, early in the game, and he knows a lot about running the football, as you and I both know, he talked about, hey, look, the offensive line's going to have to get better at opening these creases. Correct. But make no mistake, against SEC defensive fronts, they're not going to be gaping holes. You're going to have these small creases that will open, and then they close quickly. And he said, our running backs have just as much or maybe more responsibility that you're going to have to get through some arm tackles. You're going to have to be able to keep moving after first contact. And as soon as Durham broke that touchdown, which, by the way, what a call by the offensive coordinator, Joe Sloan, third and nine, everybody, all 78,000 people at Williams-Brice and millions watching probably thought this is going to be Garrett Nussmeier's play to get through the air. They make that call, and Durham does exactly that. I mean, and then as the game wore on, he was breaking first contact. He was breaking second contact. And that helps out the offensive line. I mean, I think it helps them schematically. I also think it helps them with a confidence, you know, that they know they're back. If they can just give them that small sliver that they can go and do it. And really, he's the first running back this season that's been able to do that for LSU. And I agree with you. I think Coach Kelly's like, look, we got to keep this youngster hungry, so I'm not going to put the crown on him just yet. And I also think, to your point, you know, depending on down and distance, I mean, on third down, you're probably going to rely, third down and passing situations, you're going to rely on Josh Williams for his pass protection just because he's been there, and he's probably the best at doing that, although I think Caleb's gotten better. But I think you'll see certainly Caden Durham is going to be part of the mix moving forward, and excited to see because, again, if history means anything, he's the first freshman running back to have two rushing touchdowns against an SEC opponent since a guy by the name of Leonard Fournette in 2014.
Yeah, he was pretty good, Leonard.
Yeah, he was pretty good. So, yeah, I expect to see a lot more of Durham.
We were looking for this. There's always got to be a guy step up. And this offseason, I got to talk to him a few times at wide receiver, and that was Kyron Lacy. And he was like, man, Mr. Mike, I'm ready. I'm ready. And when you needed a play, Kyron made it for you late in the game. And so, man, I'm proud to see what he's done. He had some problems early in his career, not maybe securing a pass that was an easy catch. I think he was trying to take off with it before he actually caught it. People say he got bad hands. He doesn't have bad hands. He's got great hands. It's just that he was a little over-anxious to try to get up the field with the play, and he would drop it. I think you're seeing now the emergence of Kyron Lacy here. He's not Brian Thomas Jr. He doesn't have that type of speed. He doesn't have the shiftiness of Malik Nabers. He's sort of a hybrid of both of them a little bit. But with his size, his ability to get up in the air and make a play with the ball in flight, you are watching in front of your very eyes a guy that is taking that next step.
No, he's without question to me one of the best possession receivers in the college game right now. And I think, you know, going back to his early days and a couple of key drops, I agree with you. I think it was now the game has slowed down a little bit for him. And I think he's like, to secure the ball, and I'll still have time to make a cut or a quick move or a spin and get some yards after the catch. So I think he's just more confident, and the game's a little slower for him, and that's why he's been so successful. And frankly, you know, when you look at what he's been able to do through the first three games, you look at how the emergence of Aaron Anderson, who, again, last year when he transferred in, he didn't look as fast as maybe his film in high school, you know, had led us to believe. And Coach Kelly told me after week one, he said, look, Aaron Anderson now knows the offense. He knows his responsibility as that slot receiver. He's running crisp routes, and he's not thinking. He's just going out and playing. And you can tell. I mean, he's an absolute burner out there. And what a huge catch he made for that 46-yard reception when the Tigers needed it in such a bad way. And then I think, you know, C.J. Daniels has done a good job, very similar to Kyron in the fact that if you're looking for something underneath or an out pattern, I mean, I think he is a stalwart receiver in that regard. If there's one thing that LSU desperately needs to get back, it's that burner.
And Chris, of course, Hilton.
You know, we're Chris Hilton we need. And we need, I think, a real healthy, you know, there's two. Kyle Parker is another. You know, once he's fully healthy, and you know how those injuries are. You come off an injury, physically you may be there, but you've got to get mentally where you know you can make these cuts and you can put the weight on this leg or that leg. And once that comes around, I mean, this receiving core, for me, has been as advertised. And there I forget, you know, Mason Taylor, who I think he's a nightmare matchup for every team we're going to face this year. I mean, when you talk about those names I just mentioned at the receiver position, who are you going to put on Mason Taylor? And I think he is deceivingly faster than most people know because, I say this all the time. I'm so used to tight ends, big targets, good hands, which Mason has, you know, catch the ball and then stumble 4 or 5 extra yards. Mason's making the catch, and he's looking to make a cut and go. And that's what makes him so special, and that's why I think he's the, you know, LSU leader in tight end receptions now. That receiving core is as advertised, and, you know, Garrett Nussmeier does a good job of getting the football to them, and I just think it's a defensive coordinator's nightmare. If you can add that over-the-top burner where Garrett, and you know Garrett loves that kind of throw, so give him a guy that will stretch the field, I think LSU just adds to an already dangerous set of weaponry against their opponents.
Chris, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Always appreciated. Always great insights. And I hope for one thing. I know we're getting close to October. Man, I hope it's a really hot, humid day. Man, let UCLA come into here. Okay, people say, oh, they're used to the heat. What? Not this heat. Not this humidity. Make it a real warm day with a lot of humidity. Man, that catches you. You can be in shape, but not that type of shape, because they've never been in this type of environment, so to speak, in September in Louisiana.
I think you nailed it, Mike. I talked to Josh Lewin, who's the voice of UCLA today. He said, look, the Bruins are used to playing in big houses. 102,000 people won't intimidate them. But 91 degrees and high humidity, that's a whole nother animal. So that's what we're looking for.
Let's hope we get it Saturday afternoon. Chris, thanks so much again for joining me. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure to join you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers.